Good morning. We mentioned in the Gemara, Sanhedrin, Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph, that Hashem wanted to make Chizkiya Mashiach and Sancheirav Gog Umagog. Gog Umagog is very closely connected with Sukkos. We have one shiur before Sukkos. That is what I would like to talk about today. The one thing we will not do today or ever in this shiur is speculate about current events, past events, future events, who's Gog Umagog, what's Gog Umagog. We're not going to do that. We're going to talk about what Chazal and the great Mefarshim had to say about Gog Umagog. And today, as I said, particularly Sukkos. So Sukkos is closely connected with Melchemes Gog Umagog. Melchemes Gog Umagog is closely connected with Sukkos. The Haftorah for the first day of Sukkos, which comes from Zechariah, Perek Yudalid, starts out, Hine yom ba l'Hashem v'chulak shlalech b'kerbeich. Behold, a day will come for Hashem when that spoils that have been taken will be shared in your midst. V'asafti et kol ha'goyim el Yerushalayim l'melchama. I will gather all the nations against Yerushalayim to battle. Nilkeda ha'ir, and the city will be captured, conquered. V'nashasu avatim v'anashim tishagalna. Lots of unpleasant things will happen. V'yatza chatzi ha'ir bagola, half the city will be exiled. V'yeter am lo yikarit min ha'ir, and but a residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. V'yatza Hashem nilcham v'goyim ahem v'yom yilchamob v'yom krav, and Hashem will go forth and fight against those nations as he has fought on the day of the battle. And the Navi goes on and describes how the goyim will be defeated and Hashem will be revealed. And Vaya Hashem l'melech ha'kol aretz b'mahuya Hashem echad yishmo echad, famous pasuk, we say it at the end of Aleinu, among other places. And then the Navi says that after this, those who are left from the Goyim will come up to Yerushalayim every year to celebrate Sukkos. And if they don't, the following things will happen. So the Navi describes a war, a very terrible war, which eventually the Goyim will be, it's a group of Goyim coming up against, of nations of Goyim coming up against Yerushalayim. They will be defeated and they will observe Sukkos. It's the famous Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which says that at the end of time, the Goyim will say to Hashem, it's not fair, you gave the Jewish people the Torah, you didn't give us the Torah, Hashem will give them one mitzvah, that mitzvah will be Sukkos, Sukkah. And they will fail to keep it properly. Some connection between Goyim and Sukkos. That's Haftorah for the first day of Sukkos. Shabbos Chol Moed, we have Yechezkel Perek Lamed Chet. We've talked a lot recently about some nevuos in Yechezkel, the dry bones and the nevuah of Ephraim and Yehuda being reunited, the two sticks that will be brought together. Those are in Yechezkel Perek Lamed Zayin. This is Yechezkel Perek Lamed Chet. Chapters in Navi are not always connected to each other just because they're next to each other, but noteworthy. And this says, this Haftorah for Shabbos Chol Hamoed, Vayav Hayom Ahu B'Yom Bo Gog Al Admat Yisrael Neum Hashem Elokim Ta'alech Hamati Bapi. It will come to pass on that day when Gog comes up on the land of Yisrael, says Hashem Elohim, my blazing indignation will rise in my wrath. Get angry. Describes a war. Gog will be defeated. It mentions also Magog, Mashilachti Esh b'Magog. I will send fire on Magog. The simplest understanding is that Magog is a nation and Gog is the king of that nation. There are possibly other understandings that have been mentioned before by people in the Shir. But the Haftorah will ends with Gog being defeated and the Goyim being buried by the Jewish people. That is the Haftorah for Shabbos Chol Hamoed. So very clearly there's some connection between Sukkos and Gog Magog, and Sukkot, and the end of days. So Rav Mendel Hirsch, son, Rav Mendel Hirsch was one of the sons of Rav Shamshon Fall Hirsch. In the typical set of Hirsch Chumashim, if you don't read the title page, you don't realize that the volume that says Haftorah does not have the commentary of Rav Hirsch, but rather of his son, Rav Mendel Hirsch. And he says, this is translated from German into very flowery English. If you're familiar with commentary of Rav Hirsch, you're familiar with that, so I'm just going to read parts of it. The connection of the Haftorah to the festival is quite apparent, for in it is mentioned three times as the goal of the whole historical development of mankind, and as announcing the reaching of that goal, that all nations will come up yearly to Yerushalayim to prostrate themselves before God, as calling all creatures to a service, and to celebrate the festival of Sukkot. Here we have the loudest proclamation of the world historical meaning and importance of just the festival of Sukkot. The same thought, indeed, is expressed in the special offerings of this festival. The korbanos of Sukkot, we know, were decreasing in number, 13 on the first day, the bulls, right, 13 on the first day, 12, 11, 10, decreasing in number, total of 70, the Gemara says represents the 70 nations of the world, in some way decreasing. Different commentaries explain different ideas. Rav Mendel Hirsch explains, really, based a lot of what he writes is based on his father's writings, Rav Shamshon Far Hirsch. So what he writes is, for just as on Sukkot it is indicated in them how the difference between God serving Israel and the heathen world will always get less and less by the progress mankind will make in recognizing and fulfilling the universal duties of mankind. So the decreasing number of bulls, it doesn't mean the Gentile nations are disappearing. It means the differences between monotheism and paganism, or paganism is disappearing. The difference between our beliefs and the rest of the world will decrease. And that's something certainly that we've seen happen over history, not entirely, but talk about the Judeo-Christian ethic, whatever that is, but clearly, Judaism has had an influence on the world, Christianity, Islam. So that's his interpretation of what the decreasing number of sheep, of bulls, alludes to, and that is the korban of Sukkot. So clearly, we see a connection, again, between the entire world coming to its resolution and Sukkot. He says, this chapter, referring to the Haftorah for the first day, with its outlook on the final goal and the struggles and wars which will precede its being reached, presents difficulties which certainly require explanations. Many of them will only be fully understood when the actual time arrives. Hopefully that sounds familiar. At some of them, we must limit ourselves to referring to the sayings of the prophets elsewhere and on allusions which at least offer some explanation and shed some light on the obscure passages. But the basic thought and the great truths which were to be revealed by the historical events prophesied only shine through to us the brighter out of the darkness of the historical background. That is his introduction to the Haftorah of the first day of Sukkot, as far as the commentary. I invite you to look there yourself and over Yom Tov and see what he has to say about it. An Haftorah for Shabbos Chol HaMoed, Rav Mendel Hirsch writes, like the one chosen for the first day of the festival, so is a chapter chosen for the prophets which refers to the final decisive fight, the end of which designates the victory of goodness on earth, the final dawn of the permanent peace and happiness of mankind. Zechariah described there, the Haftorah for the first day is from Sefer Zechariah, the sign of this victory being the coming of the United Nations up in the United Nations with small u and small n. He lived before the United Nations. So he says, the coming of the United Nations up to Jerusalem every year at the Festival of Tabernacles to declare their loyalty to God. In this Haftorah, Yechezkel lifts the veil from an earlier stage of that happy future. He visualizes the last assault of the nations against the truth proclaimed on Zion under a leader who is called Gog. And then he quotes his father, Shamshon Ophel Hirsch. It does not seem far-fetched to recognize in his name Gog, writes S.R.H., Shamshon Ophel Hirsch, in the commentary on Bamidbar 24:13, page 495, the idea of building a roof from Gog. So Gog is like Gog, which is a roof, and thereby at once see the contrast to Sukkah, the unstable, weak covering of foliage. And actually, the whole history of mankind can be taken to consist of this contrast. One erroneous conception leads to another. Just as they are given the power to use their own strength to fix the boundaries of their own sphere and make it safe and secure against their earthly contemporaries by defanot, the walls of the sukkah, the defanot, separate us from our next door neighbors. We can decide where our sukkah ends and our neighbor's sukkah starts. Right? The goyim can fight among themselves and set where their boundaries are, or they can negotiate where their boundaries are with their neighbors. By strongly built artificial walls, so do they imagine they have to use their power to make themselves safe and sure against that which comes from above, against God and the influence of his power of directing matters. They think they can betake themselves under the protection of their own might, can take their fate into their own hands, and can crown the building up of human greatness by gabled roofs, rendering them independent of God. It is the battle of Gog against Sukkah, the fight of the roof illusion of human greatness, which never allows man to come to repose against the Sukkah truth of cheerful confidence and quietness, which putting one's trust in God's protection grants. World history started with the building of a towering up to heaven by the self-worship of human power, referring to Migdal Bavel, man was going to go fight God and tell God to mind his own business and stay out of our world. That's how it started, and it will end with a happy, harmonious human life on earth, building booths, acknowledging God. Rav Shamshon Ophel Hirsch, in his commentary, I said 24, 29 actually, Parshas Pinchas, where it talks about the korbanos of Sukkis. So he quoted part of what he says. He says there, after the part that was just quoted about Gog and Gog and Sukkah, he says, Judaism leaves other disciplines to teach that by renunciation of this world, one wins the next world. It reserves for itself the teaching that by a life of God-acknowledging duty, one can attain beatitude, that's like saintliness, in this world and paradise. Life in the next world can begin here in this one. And this teaching preached by the Sukkot festival for Israel throughout the ages makes itself a universal prospect for the future of all nations by its group of Moed offerings. What I think he means is that on Sukkis, we take all of our normal earthly activities, eating, drinking, sleeping, just hanging out. I saw yesterday in his commentary in the Yamim Noraim Tefillah, the very last piece, Rav Moshe Eisenman, he refers to, Shulchan Aruch says that a person should eat, drink, sleep, and litayel, which in modern Hebrew means take walks in the sukkah. But when the Rama uses that word, l'tayel, he really means what we call hanging out. So Rav Moshe Eisenman describes it as undirected, religiously neutral activities. So all of your undirected, religiously neutral activities should be in the sukkah as well. You want to play a board game? You want to read a book? Should be in the sukkah. Whatever it is, should be in the sukkah. So that teaches us from... What do you mean?
There's someone who says you shouldn't be doing those things.
No, if you should be, someone once asked Rabbi Einemer, probably more than once, but I remember once, someone asked Rabbi Einemer, are you allowed to watch television during the Omer? His answer was, if you're allowed to watch television. So if you're allowed to play a board game on Yom Tov, if you're allowed to read a novel on Yom Tov, do it in the Sukkah. If you're allowed to work during Chol HaMoed, and you have the luxury of working from home, do it in the Sukkah. Whatever religiously neutral activities. That's what you should do. So what that teaches, Rav Hirsch is saying, is that we don't separate our religious world. The sukkah is not a monastery up on a hill.
The sukkah is the place we go to. We sanctify our daily lives in the sukkah. And what Rav Eisenman is discussing there, he says, such a beautiful way of writing, but he says, if Yom Kippur ends with Ne'ilah, we miss the point. Because Sukkot is really taking the holiness that we built up over Yom Kippur, and we bring it into our everyday lives, but we can't just jump into our everyday lives, so we take it first into the sukkah, and then, you know, it's like gradually step down to our everyday lives. Question came up that why isn't sukkah immediately after Yom Kippur? And the answer we came up with was because the women need time to cook. But in any event, that is Rav Shamshal Feil Hirsch and his son, Rav Mendel Hirsch. Maral, of course, came first. The Hirsches lived in the 1800s. Rav Mendel Hirsch, I think, in the first years of the 1900s. Maral was in the 15 and 1600s. In Netzach Yisrael, Perek Lamed Chet, he writes that whenever you have two things that are opposed to each other, they can't both flower at the same time. So that's the idea of, fine, for example, Yaakov and Esav. Gemara says when one is up, the other will be down. When the other one's up, the first one will be down. They can't both flower at the same time. However, when Mashiach comes, the world will be united under Hashem. There won't be competition. There won't be different nations vying for superiority over each other or over the Jewish people, or the Jewish people trying to fight for its place, because everything will be united. The goyim of the world can't handle this idea. Doesn't mean that they're sitting in the United Nations with uppercase letters and saying, consciously saying, we need to fight for lots of nations against time of Mashiach, who's going to make one. And that means in Shemayim, the guardian angels of the nations, or just conceptually some abstract concept. The nations of the world tend toward chaos. Mashiach represents orderliness and unity. Therefore, the nations of the world have to be opposed to Mashiach. And that is what the Maral says, Milchemes Gog u'Magog is all about. It's the Goyim fighting to prevent the unification of the world, because they are many, and many tends to stay many, and to oppose unity. But Hashem is one, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and the Jewish people are one, Vikam Chai Yisrael Goy Echad Ba'aretz, who is like your nation, Israel, one nation in the world. And so the Jewish people are attracted to Hashem because we're one and he's one. And in the future, everything will be one. That is, in essence, his explanation of the idea why there will be a Milchemes Gog u'Magog. Parenthetically, perhaps, he says, Chazal say that Perek Bet of Tehillim starts, Lama Ragshu Goyim, why have the nations trembled, made noise, is that whole chapter, the second chapter of Tehillim, is an allusion to Gog u'Magog. And the Mara says that perhaps you will ask, how is it possible for the nations of the world to rebel against their master? How does a slave rebel against his master? Therefore, it's next to Paragimel, which is about Avshalom rebelling against his father David. Just like a son can rebel against his father, so too the servants can rebel against their master. It doesn't really answer the question, how is it possible? How could the world be so blind as to want to rebel against Hashem. So Rav Yehoshua Hartman, the editor of this edition of Maral, which is now has become the definitive edition of the Maral, these blue volumes, he says that the concept of Maral, one difficulty is learning Maral is that he mentions a concept somewhere and develops it in a different sefer. And beautiful thing that Rabbi Hartman did is all these footnotes that bring together dozens of sources about a concept in Maral. So one of his concepts that the Maral develops is that when something is a cause and effect, like a father and a son, or Hashem and his creations, on the one hand, it causes a closeness, but there's also, paradoxically, a distance, because the thing, the creator and the thing that was created are inherently different. So, sorry, but a father and a son, or Hashem and his creations, there's a closeness, but there's also some distance. And it's because of there's inherently distance between them that makes it possible for a person to rebel against Hashem, or a son of Shalom to rebel against his father. Still a little bit of an abstract concept, but that's the concept of Maral. The basic idea that the Maral develops or teaches about Gog Magog is that it's the rebellion of the many who want to remain many against the one, against Hashem. That immediately suggests a connection to Sukkot, which I thought of myself when I learned the Maral, but I don't like to say things in my own name, and unfortunately I found these ideas expressed in a very old sefer and a relatively new sefer. It was a Rishon, a student of the Rashba, so he lived in Spain in the 1300s, of Rabbi Yeshua Ibn Shuib. And he says, at the end of his drasha for the first day of Sukkot, "V'ein safek sheyesh b'mitzvat sukkah inyan gadol k'mo b'lulav minav." His whole drasha is talking about the arba minim. In the end, he says, and there's no doubt that the sukkah has as many big ideas behind it as the lulav does. "V'chein anu beit Yisrael atidim lasot oto b'zman Mashiach ayad humot mashloin tzvu v'pesach." And that's why Sukkot is the holiday of in the future we will celebrate with the Goyim, which we don't find about Pesach or Shavuos or any other holiday. Dichtiv, as it says in the Haftorah for the first day, Vayakol anatar mikol asher lo yalu lachog chag haSukkot, says those who remain, who do not come up to celebrate Sukkot, Hashem will punish them for not observing Sukkot. V'lachein hi mitzvah gdolav ein ladam lipater mimena lo mishum avilut lo mishum devar acher. Therefore, it's a great mitzvah, and a person should not get out of it because of avelus. He's referring there to a discussion in the Gemara about, we know, mitzta'er patur miyasukah, a person who's suffering is patur from the sukkah, and the Gemara says that doesn't mean a person who's suffering because of avelus, just had a death in the family, that's not an exemption from sukkah. It means a person who's suffering because of the sukkah. It's raining, you have allergies, bugs. If you're suffering from something that you'll suffer from just as much in the house, that doesn't exempt you from sitting in the sukkah. So, it says, V'kvar nish'al Rabbeinu Hai Gaon was asked, Al anashim hanichnasim sukkah chavreim yotzim shlo yad lahem mash yasu sukkah im yotzim. Whether a person can be yotze in someone else's sukkah, and he said no. And that's a discussion in the Gemara. We hold you can be yotze with someone else's sukkah. But his point is, these people said they don't have anything to make their own sukkah with. What do you mean don't have anything to make your own sukkah with? Go out in the woods and gather some branches and make a sukkah. It's not very hard to make a sukkah. So, and that's the point he's trying to bring.
Even though we don't pask in that way, you can be yotze in someone else's sukkah. V'zeu ma shamar, and that's why it says in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that I alluded to before, that Hashem will tell the nations, mitzvah k'tana yesh li sukkah shma. I have a small mitzvah, and it's called sukkah. Lo shiktana, it's not a small mitzvah. Ki gedolahi ma'od, it's a very great mitzvah. Vel hiktana v'hotza'ah, but it's a very cheap mitzvah to perform. You don't have to buy a fancy sukkah online or from a bookstore. You can go out and gather natural materials and make a sukkah. L'chein ba'u batrash l'sha pamim v'sukot shnaim chaser v'chad malei. The word sukkot is mentioned three times in the Torah, once with a vav and twice without a vav, because our sukkahs are not complete. The sukkah in time of Mashiach will be complete, because then all the nations will come to recognize Hashem. And it says, Yizkayem Yivad Zechariah B'Zof Torah, and then the prophecy of Zechariah will be fulfilled. Shua B'yat HaMashiach Kol Oto Inyan V'Kayem Yikrad Yechtiv V'Yah Hashem HaMelech HaKol Aretz V'Yomer Hu Yih Hashem Echad U'Shmo Echad. On that day, Hashem will be one, and His name will be one. Hashem is already one, but His name is not one because He's not recognized as one. In the Sefer, Oros HaRaya collected writings of Rav Kook on Sukkot, brings something actually from his son-in-law, Rav Shalom Nassan Ranan. And he writes, why will, as the Gemara says, and as Rav Yoshua ibn Shuib just mentioned, why is Sukkah the mitzvah that will be given to the Goyim? So there's an interesting pasuk regarding Sukkot. It says, Kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu b'sukkot. All the citizens of Israel should sit in Sukkah. From here we learn that although there is a minimum size for a sukkah, halachically, there's no maximum size for a sukkah. If it was conceivable, if it was possible, to build a sukkah large enough for the entire Jewish people to sit in, it would be a kosher sukkah. Because the very idea of sukkahs, as we see, is the idea of unity, of Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. Hashem is one. The Jewish people are one. And eventually the entire world will be one and will recognize the oneness of Hashem. So a sukkah that's large enough for the entire Jewish people is a kosher sukkah. And Sukkot is the holiday of the Goyim in the future, because they will also come to be one and recognize that Hashem is one. That suggests what the Maharal doesn't say explicitly. The Maharal, in his discussion of Gog and Magog, does not mention Sukkot, but we combine these ideas with what the Maharal is saying, that Mechemes Gog Magog is the war against the unity of Hashem. It's the Goyim who are many. It's the multitude. That's the whole point of Mechemes Gog Magog, that they are a multitude against the one. And so Sukkot, which is a holiday of unity, and we find this as well by the Arba Minyan, because we know the famous Medrash, that the four species represent four types of Jews. The lulav has a taste but no smell, because it comes from a date palm, so it has a taste. The esrog has a taste and a smell. The dasim have a smell but no taste. The ravas have no taste and no smell. We unite them all together on Sukkot. This also explain, and I saw this connection somewhere as well, and now I don't remember where, but the Medrash that says that the Arba Minim represent this idea that we just came out of the Yamim Noraim, the Days of Judgment, and the Medrash says, we don't know who won. Did the Jews win, or did the Goyim win? So we go out carrying a spear, like a sword, a sign of nobility. The lulav and the Arba Minyan, it's a sign as well that the unity of the Jewish people has won out over the desire of the Goyim to be many to fight the unity. So all of these ideas
are connected with Sukkos, and therefore connected, or therefore Sukkos is connected with Gog u'Magog, as we see from the Haftarahs. So I wanted to share this before Sukkos, so you have something to say at your Yom Tov table. At least one of the meals is covered now. In Yirtzeh Hashem, we will continue Wednesday and Thursday of Chol HaMoed to have shiur, and have a good day.